You're listening to the Foul Ball Area podcast with Matthew Atkins, now available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and Apple Podcasts. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest episode of the Foul Ball Area podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Atkins. Alongside me is the official co-host of the podcast, Trey Lyle, joining us from Kansas once again.
Hello. Hey, how's everyone doing? Thanks so much for tuning in this week. Matt, how are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well, holding out. Not much has changed since last week. Still just hanging out at home, riding out this pandemic.
Yeah, that's basically it. I go to work every day, except Mondays, and you know, I'll be 23 at the end of the week, so that's the only new thing.
Yeah, forgot about that. Your birthday's coming up. I think it's Friday, right?
It is on Friday.
All right.
And your birthday's coming up too. It's also May.
Yeah. Next Thursday is my birthday, so we'll have to send out a special happy birthday message for you on Friday from the official Foul Ball Area social media accounts. By the way, make sure you're following Foul Ball Area on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe. If you feel like it, leave a review and a rating. Let us know what you think.
Leave us a review. It bumps our popularity up.
And share us with your friends. I know if you're listening, you've got some friends that like baseball and would probably be interested in our content. So share the podcast with your friends. Get the word out there about Foul Ball Area. We've got a pretty good episode today. We've got a lot to talk about. A lot of news has happened around Major League Baseball in the past couple of days. But before we get into that, we have a guest coming on the podcast today. Kind enough to join us on the podcast this week is Bailey Engel, the voice of Bluefield College, and also you served as the voice of the Bluefield Blue Jays and the Erie Seawolves in past summers. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week.
Hey, thanks, man. I'm glad I can be here. I was the number two guy in Erie. I got to give my man, Greg Gagne, a shout out. Thanks for having me on here.
So we've been talking a little bit over the past couple of weeks. We had Brady Hess on a few weeks ago. As you know, he worked in Bluefield also one of the summers that you were there and a couple other summers. And we've been talking a little bit about this minor league contraction plan. And both the teams that you've worked for are actually on the list of the 42 teams that would be eliminated if this plan were to happen as it's laid out right now. So what can you tell us from your experiences in each of those towns? You know, what did you get from those experiences? Why is minor league baseball so important to the people around the game?
Well, I'm still here in Bluefield working at Bluefield College. For those of you who don't know, the Bluefield College Rams baseball team and the Bluefield Blue Jays actually share the same stadium. So I've been as far as being able to kind of see what minor league baseball means to a small kind of impoverished and sometimes forgotten market in Appalachia, minor league baseball means a lot. It's the only show in town during the summertime. And for a lot of people, it's like one of their only outlets to entertainment around here to get out of their house. I mean, we don't have much in Bluefield that is going on. And for the people that work at the ballpark, I mean, it's their whole summer and a lot of their, you know, well-being is revolving around Bowen Field. Rocky Malamasura does a great job as the general manager there. He was kind of the handyman when I was there, and now he just runs the team now, and he's done a great job trying to move them forward. So I do think it'll be kind of devastating to Bluefield, but you know, when I think of Erie, that's the one that, you know, I guess I can, although it's completely, completely, completely unfair, like I could have predicted that Major League Baseball would do this to rookie league teams in small markets. But them doing that to Erie and then another team that was on the list originally in Binghamton, that kind of shocked me. And Erie, you know, it's a town of about 250,000 people. Minor league baseball, I wouldn't say is the only show in town, but I think it's the best show in town as far as entertainment in the summertime. It really kind of hit me as a shock when they were on there. So, I mean, I know that the staff there did a really great job of coming up with creative ways. I think one of the more creative staffs in the entire Eastern League as far as trying to get people to come to the ballpark. So I was kind of disappointed when I saw that Erie could be named on there, because, I mean, obviously those folks there mean a lot to me, and that experience meant a lot to me in my development as a broadcaster. And I think that's another thing that we haven't really seen as far as, you know, talking about the economic consequences of this happening, is a lot of these teams that aren't going to exist are the first chance for a lot of professional broadcasters out there as well. So it'll be a huge challenge for people trying to get into the business, because there's going to be less teams to try to factor in and get some really valuable experience with.
Yeah, I think you touched on that a little bit. What I was going to ask is the experience that comes with broadcasting. All three of us are people that want to get into the sports broadcasting business. You two are more probably on the play-by-play side compared to me. But that experience of working with a minor league baseball team I've had, I worked with the Flying Squirrels for a summer in the promotions department, and just having less opportunities for a broadcaster is going to make it. How hard do you think that's going to make it for broadcasters, not just in this area, but all around the country?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be really tough because, you know, it's all about, I think, you know, obviously it's about getting reps and getting better, but being in the minors and, you know, as lucky as I was to be at Double A at 21, 22 years of age, it's kind of like you get to know a lot of people. And that's a big part in this business, is getting to know some people and being able to send some emails just like, you know, hey, how are you doing? Like, can you listen to my tape? You know, just having somebody that can be your champion moving forward and getting another job. And I mean, there's going to be other ways to do that with less minor league teams. But it will be a little bit more challenging for broadcasters coming out trying to get that job, because then you're not going to be, you know, it's just a trickle domino effect, really, of you're not going to get the experience. And then you're also not going to be able to meet other people that are going to be able to help you move forward as well.
That's one of the things I've talked about with, you know, COVID-19 going on and all these collegiate summer leagues getting canceled, is they provide a training ground for broadcasters and media relations interns, promotions interns, but the minor leagues do that as well. And so obviously with these collegiate summer teams canceling this year, they'll likely be back next year. If these minor league teams are gone, then they might be gone for good. And that does take away a lot of opportunities for people that have been in our positions or other people in college looking for summer internships.
Yeah, totally. And it also just like economically, like in this business, you know, it's hard to string together. And a lot of times with these minor league jobs, you have to do a minor league job and then find another thing and then string together this and this and this until you can finally settle in. So it's already hard enough as it is to get that kind of experience and then, you know, put food on the table. I'm lucky enough in Bluefield that I'm full time and they've given me tons of opportunities to get better through, you know, being able to call a ton of sports on the air. But for a lot of guys that aren't so lucky, they're going to, they already have that gigantic hurdle of trying to get a job right out of college. And then a lot of these teams won't even be there in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And another aspect, and we're talking a little bit of minor leagues, but you kind of touched on it. You're the voice of the Bluefield College. And so obviously another result is canceling of all college baseball this year. How do you think that affected kind of just the mood around Bluefield? Because obviously college baseball kind of gets the town going in towards the minor league season.
I think that with Bluefield College, we're still trying to supplement up our brand enough to be the town's team. And I think with a culture in a lot of these small college towns in Appalachia, where you have your NAIA schools, your D2, your D3s, a lot of cases, the college really isn't the premier show, it's the high schools. So I think that COVID-19 has really devastated the two high schools in the area Graham on the Bluefield, Virginia side, and then Bluefield High School on the West Virginia side, a little bit more than Bluefield College on the baseball end as far as bringing people out. But it's still seen there as, you know, as kind of, I wouldn't say devastating, but it still hurts us as a college at Bluefield College to not have these athletic events going on, because our school is something around a little over 80% athletes. So when these guys don't have what they came to school to do, then, I mean, it kind of rips your psyche as a college a little bit.
So you also do some freelance broadcasting for the ACC network. Did you get a chance to do any Virginia Tech baseball games before the season was canceled?
I did. So I did two, what they call pass-throughs, which is, it's not a full ACC network broadcast. Like, you'll go to the same place to watch the game on Watch ESPN, but we can't officially brand it as the ACC network. It's the same crew, but it's like a very, I don't want to say dumbed down, but it's like two camera shoot. Whereas the ACC network production with the label on it is a full thing with replays and you have a color commentator. But I did get to do two of those. I actually did the last baseball game of the season that they got to play against George Mason, which was one of the crisper games of the year, actually. It was great. It was about 2 hours. And while I'm calling the game, news gets out that the NCAA tournament is going to be played in front of no fans. So I'm talking about that on the air. And then as Virginia Tech, I think they were still trying to piece together what are they going to do about spring break. And I think right around the eighth or ninth inning, they said that their spring break is going to be elongated. And UVA had already said, go home for the rest of the semester. So all of this is happening while I'm on the ACC network broadcast. But that did, I mean, I did have a lot of my ACC network reps. I was supposed to call a series that weekend in softball against, I believe it was NC State. And obviously that didn't happen either. So it all happened so fast, but I was like literally on the air when all of these decisions were being made and the pieces were moving.
So being around college baseball, how do you think that with the effects of the pandemic and spring athletes getting an extra year of eligibility, how do you think that will affect things like the number of scholarships that baseball teams get or incoming freshmen who now have to deal with seniors that are still there?
That question is honestly a little bit over my pay grade about the scholarship stuff. So I don't want to talk myself into a hole, but I think it will be interesting to see like how recruiting works with that, because you're right. A lot of guys that were supposed to graduate can come back now. I know in Bluefield, we had a few seniors that decided to just graduate and move on, but we have at least two or three that are coming back, and now they have to compete with a whole new list of freshmen that are coming in and then also transfers, what have you. So I don't know if that's going to be a bad or a good thing, but it's still going to be really interesting to see that, you know, there's guys that were plotting to be off of the team at the end of the year, and they're like, well, I'm going to come back for one more season.
I feel this is going to have a generational effect on both, like, just everything in general, what we've talked about. You had the minor leagues and the canceling of teams to, because that generates fan bases of teams all across the country. Like, the reason there's a big fan base of the Atlanta Braves in Virginia is partly because of the Richmond Braves. Yeah. So, and then in college baseball, it generally is going to have effect on, well, you have a stopgap, and now you have kind of, you're going to backload a roster with seniors. So how long, like, do you think this could affect just baseball in general? I think it could be 5 years at the least.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with all of the questions about, you know, COVID-19, how they're going to affect sports, and I'm sure you guys know this and might get annoyed with this answer, but we just literally don't know anything that's going on day to day. I mean, every day I feel like I'm turning on, you know, ESPN, and they're like, oh, MLB PA or MLB has plans to come back. It's like, do they know? Like, each day. So it's like kind of answering your question without totally answering it. It's just, we don't know how it's going to affect things. I will say, with, you did kind of allude to a good point there about you know, the Richmond Braves being why a lot of people in the in Virginia and just like the South in general like Atlanta, the Atlanta Braves, is their exposure to baseball is through that minor league team. So I think that's another effect we're going to see in Bluefield. I mean, like, these guys know who are on the, like, locals know who plays for Toronto because they had that experience with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in 2016 when he was here. You know, they've seen Rowdy Tellez play in Bluefield. You know, other guys like Noah Syndergaard has came through here. So they have that cool exposure to them, and to have that taken away possibly by, you know, the pandemic or just by financial decisions by the Major League Baseball is going to be devastating anyway.
This might be another question, like you said, a little above your pay grade, but I'm just curious, do you know or have you heard that, you know, if these teams are eliminated from minor league baseball, if they'd be able to reorganize as part of an independent league or a collegiate summer league or anything like that?
I have heard that. And honestly, I don't think that would be the worst option for Bluefield, although I think it would obviously stink. But there's a team in Beckley right up the road that does sort of the similar thing with collegiate wood, you know, summer league, whatever. And for them to be kind of affiliated with the Major League Baseball brand would be kind of cool. But it's obviously something that isn't the most ideal option. The most ideal option is to have these teams come back and the players get paid as they deserve to be. So I hope that happens. But I have heard that, you know, they could be rebranded. I haven't heard about the independent league option as much in Bluefield, but I have heard about the college league.
And anything in Erie?
In Erie, you know, I don't want to speak out of turn on that, but I mean, not to answer your question, not really. I mean, I've heard maybe like an independent league option, but, you know, it just comes into, we don't know. We don't know what they're about to do.
Thanks so much, Bailey, for your insight. I think you gave us great perspective, both on the minor league and then obviously college baseball, being working with a college and calling a couple of Virginia Tech games. So you've kind of gotten all levels and really good insight of what's going on. And thanks so much for joining us this week.
No problem, guys. I wish I had more definite things to say, but, you know, it's just like this information comes out each day and we just have to process it. Is like, is this real? Is this not? Is this really what's going to happen? So I hope you guys kind of filter that as well and just stay strong through the rest of this.
Yeah, same goes to you. And thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate your insight.
No problem.
Thanks, Bailey.
See you guys.
That was Bailey Engel, voice of the Bluefield College Rams. He's also worked for the Bluefield Blue Jays and the Erie Seawolves in minor league baseball. We appreciate him coming on today and appreciate his insight into minor league baseball and college baseball as well. A lot of uncertainties around all levels of baseball right now.
Definitely brought some great insight and a unique perspective of both the college level as well as the minor league level.
So as we said before at the intro of the podcast, a lot of news has broke around Major League Baseball in the past couple of days. Basically, the MLB owners had a conference call on Monday to vote on a proposal on how to play the 2020 season. They approved this proposal and they sent it to the Major League Baseball Players Association so that they could vote on it as well. And here's how it's going to work. There will be an 82-game season. Teams will be playing at their home ballparks. The schedule is going to be regionalized, so teams will face opponents only from their own division and from the same division in the other league. So, for example, the Braves in the National League East, they would only play teams in their own division, and then they would also play teams in the American League East to try to keep things regionalized and limit the amount of travel. The playoffs will also be expanded from 10 teams to 14. There will be 7 teams from each league. I'm not really a fan of this particular aspect of the proposal, but I know MLB has been looking at playoff expansion for a couple of years, so they're going to try that this year.
Another part of that would be if you look both when the Giants won in 2010 and the Nats won last year, they did not make the playoffs at the 82-game point. So they would have been – so I think that's part of it is, like, you don't really get a good – a couple teams who went on to win a World Series haven't made the playoffs. So if you expand it, you're probably going to get a better estimation of who's the best team.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a good point.
In terms of the shortened games, I agree. Like in the long run, I don't like a 14 game playoff, but I think if you do shorten the games, it's going to be hard to get a perfect barometer of who's the best team when you play every game, because losing three games is meaningless a lot more in an 82 game season than 162 game season. So I think if you expand the playoffs, it allows the margin of error, if you want to call it, to be a little bigger of finding who's the best team, even though probably a team with the best record is going to win it.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, for this year, I can see how it makes sense. I'm not a fan of it going forward, but they're probably going to try to keep it going forward.
There's a bit another part where I think they're going to try to keep going forward as well. Nationalizing the designated hitter, because you're going to have regional teams. You're going to have a lot more interleague. So I get why they want to bring a universal DH in. Both of us have been on the record, I think, against having a universal DH, getting rid of the DH. And so I'm not the biggest fan of that, but I at this point am okay with it either being one way or the other. I don't like how it splits them sometimes, because it gets a little confusing. But I get why they're going to do it, because they need to emphasize pitching in this 82 game season. When it's less games, you're going to have probably quicker turnarounds for pitchers, so exposing them less is a smarter idea.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of these ideas, such as the expanded playoffs and the universal DH, these are things that they're implementing this year out of necessity to get the season played, but it's very possible that they'll look at it going forward in future seasons and say, hey, we did that in 2020. Let's keep that. Let's make it a permanent thing. And that's what I'm a little worried about. I don't want a universal DH. I don't want expanded playoffs. I wouldn't say I'm exactly a baseball purist. There are people like my dad who thinks that the World Series should just be the two teams with the best record in each league. I think there's got to be some playoffs, but I don't like 14 teams making the playoffs. It makes it mean less.
So expanded playoff, almost half the teams in the league make it. I think, but none of this matters really. Let's be real. It's gonna be interesting what they do with the Blue Jays and where they play, because I think Canada is still restricting movement to the U.S. So that would be another hurdle, but that's a governmental hurdle. Sean Doolittle, if you follow him on Twitter, he brought up a lot of questions about the health risk, and Major League Baseball needs to ask that. Jeff Passan, again, a great interview with Scott Van Pelt on Monday night about all of this and like the questions. And I think the biggest thing it comes down to is money. The NFLPA executive director already came out and said, look, Major League Baseball, the owners, by saying we need to cut our pay for this year, is already trying to institute a salary cap. We don't want a salary cap. This is not how we want roll. We want, and so it's going to come down to money. These rules, I think, all are going to be intact. It's going to come down to how much money do the players get versus the owners get, and that's what it's going to come down to. And so I think we're taking the right steps, but we're still a long way away from even having baseball back.
Yeah, so that's the thing. You know, there are parts of this proposal that we have issues with, but if that's what it takes to get baseball played this year, then I'm all right with it for this year. And so the owners have approved this proposal. They've sent it to the Players Association, and it looks like they're making progress towards a season. But the issue now is this whole pay dispute, where the owners now want to do a revenue sharing system. The players are upset because they already had an agreement in place. They reached an agreement in March where the players would get paid on a prorated basis for however many games they play this season. Now the owners want to go back on that, and they want a revenue sharing system. And it's causing a whole bunch of issues, because the players say that they're not going to lose that much revenue because TV deals still bring in a lot of money. The owners say that the loss of ticket sales is going to cause them to lose a lot of money. The two sides are going back and forth. It's going to cause this huge pay dispute. And even if we do reach an agreement on how to play the season, this money issue might stop us from having a 2020 season.
Yeah, that's the one thing that will hold it up the most, is the money. I think if you talk to anyone in baseball, that's what they're going to say, is the money is going to hold it up the most. But I also think the whole – what you the year the strike happened and they canceled baseball, that would have been 94. We weren't alive then. And not having the season is going to loom large over this. And Jeff Passan brought this up. I think the players want to play, and the owners want to have games. So that's starting somewhere. And I think eventually what's going to happen is probably they're going to have to take a pay cut. Like, it's there's going to be less revenue in baseball this year because less games and less no fans. But I think the players can incentivize by getting some other things in the long run, meaning whatever that may be. I don't know this stuff, and Matt doesn't either, really. Like, we listen, and I think they're going to have to take a pay cut, though, I think, which sucks for the players, but it's what's going to have to happen in order for this to happen.
It does suck for the players, and a lot of people on Twitter think that the players are going to come out of this looking bad because of everything that's going on right now in the midst of this pandemic. So many people have lost their jobs. So many people are unemployed now. And the players, you know, even if it's not fair, the fact that they're arguing for part of their salary when they're still be making millions of dollars, some people are going to think that looks bad. And on a certain level, it does, but they're still, I mean, they're fighting for their fair share of the revenue, which they're not getting. They had an agreement, and now the owners don't want to honor that agreement.
Yeah, I agree. I think the players shouldn't have to take a pay cut. I don't. I really do. I think if you're a player, you deserve as much money as possible, and I hope that they don't. I really hope they don't, but my gut is telling me that they're going to have to, like – The good news is the MLBPA is the strongest player organization union in all of sports. It is. The fact they don't have a salary cap just proves they are the strongest organization. So I hope they don't have to take a pay cut, and they take sacrifices in the draft, limiting the draft picks, like stuff like that. They might be able to do that kind of work. It's a workaround. So we'll see what happens.
Definitely an interesting situation, one to watch over the coming days. Not sure when everything will be finalized, but it will be a very interesting situation to watch as we try to figure out when the 2020 season will take place, how it will take place, and whether or not the players will get paid this year. Now, keeping with our Hall of Fame discussions that we've done on most of the recent podcasts, we didn't do one last week, but today we're going to look at St. Louis Cardinals catcher Yadier Molina and his Hall of Fame chances. When you just think about Yadier Molina, it's easy to think, like, yeah, he's a great catcher. He's going to be a lock for the Hall of Fame. Take a look at some of his stats. His career batting average is .282, on base percentage .333, and a slugging percentage of .405. He has 156 home runs, 916 RBIs, and 40 wins above replacement, 9-time All-Star, 9-time Gold Glove winner, 2-time World Series champion. The average Hall of Fame catcher has 53.6 career wins above replacement, like I said, Molina at 40.1. I think he's, you know, you look at average Hall of Fame catchers, I think he's about average. He's not better than most. He's not worse than most. He's pretty much in the middle, you know, except for the wins above replacement. He's considerably lower there. But if you look at some of his other stats, among catchers, he ranks 36th all-time in home runs, which isn't great, but 17th all-time in RBIs, 13th all-time in hits. So he's got some of the stats, but not all of them.
Yeah, I think what will help him is that you could argue he's the best at his position over the last for a long period of time. And I think that's what's going to help him is that he played in an era where catcher was not that dominant catcher. And so he was able to say, I was the best in my position for a while. And so it'll be interesting to see. I think he'll get in. I think if you think about it, like, it kind of is something where at first glance you're to look at it and you say Yadier Molina's a Hall of Famer. And I think once you say that, then I think he'll get in. I don't think he'll get in the first ballot, but I think – over time, he'll get it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the catchers of this generation, and it's like Joe Mauer, who we talked about a couple weeks ago, Buster Posey, and Yadier Molina. I mean, those are the three catchers that have defined the past decade and a half. They are the best catchers during their time. And you got some of the younger guys that are becoming the next generation of great catchers, like Gary Sanchez, JT Realmuto, Salvador Perez had a couple good years in Kansas City. So those three, Mauer, Molina, and Posey, they're the best of their generation. And they've been consistently the best. So also, I think what will help him is those two World Series championships.
Yeah, absolutely. I think winning cures a lot of things and helps with a lot of things. And him being a two-time World Series champion is definitely going to help.
So I'm going to agree with you there that I think he will get in. It won't be, I don't think it'll be first ballot, maybe second or third. But he will get in to the Hall of Fame eventually. And he will be one of the greatest catchers of all time.
Again, it depends on who he's with, because I think there's certain players in this generation that he would not get in over. Like, if he's with Buster Posey, I think Buster Posey gets in. Because me, Buster Posey was the best catcher in baseball over the last 10 years. And so it's going to be difficult to see. Like, again, there's a lot more factors, but I think he'll eventually get in.
It'll be interesting to watch over the next year or two if he stays with the Cardinals also. I mean, I don't know if that's something that'll really affect his Hall of Fame chances. I think he already pretty much has the resume to make it in. But there's some rumors, some dispute over whether or not he'll stay with the Cardinals if they don't offer him the contract that he wants. And he's getting old. He's towards the end of his career. So maybe he'll just retire. Maybe he wants to keep playing and go for a different team. But it would just feel wrong seeing him on a different team.
Absolutely, but the way baseball works and most sports work, I mean, whoever thought Tom Brady would be part of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? So I won't say it's out of this universe for him to switch teams.
Yeah, it is a business. You got to remember that. Before we wrap up today's episode of the podcast, I do have to mention Clover Hill Bucks head coach Chris Cofer passed away last week. The Rockingham County Baseball League lost a great member of its community. He was a great coach, a great person. I loved talking to him after games. He was one of my favorite coaches to interview. He always gave great answers. He was a really insightful and smart baseball guy. Great to be around at the ballpark. And I mean, he put so much effort into Clover Hill as both a player and a coach, bringing them a lot of championships during his time. He saw a lot of success on the field. And by all accounts, he was a great guy off the field. So rest in peace to Clover Hill Bucks head coach Chris Cofer. My thoughts and prayers are with the Cofer family and the entire Clover Hill community at this time. All right, Trey, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the podcast. I think that was a pretty good one. Talked to Bailey Engel, voice of the Bluefield College Rams, for a little bit, and then discussing when and if Major League Baseball is going to get its 2020 season put into place. I don't know what's going to happen, but I hope something happens soon. You know, I'm watching the KBO and the CPBL, but it's not enough to hold me over all summer.
Yeah, I agree. I think we need Major League Baseball back, man. I was hoping to go to a Royals game this year, but obviously that probably won't happen. But as long as there's going to be some baseball, we broadcast baseball games at our station, so we're hoping to have them back as some content. So can't wait for baseball to be back as soon as possible, please. It would be really cool. Also, they're talking about, obviously, a proposal. Talking about a July 4th start. So that'd be pretty cool. Have the America's pastime start on America's birthday would be pretty cool as the final note about this.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the July 4th opening day idea. Speaking of birthdays, happy birthday on Friday. If I don't talk to you before then, hope you have a great day, and we'll send some kind of shout out on Twitter.
And we'll next week will be your birthday episode, so we'll save that till then.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of Foul Ball Area. Thanks to Bailey Engel for joining us. Thanks always to Trey Lyle, my co-host. We'll see you all next week. I'm Matthew Atkins.